This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Well, here's an ad that came from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, from the CDC. Measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis B, tetanus, diphtheria, influenza, pneumococcal disease. Get vaccinated to stay healthy. Don't become an endangered species. Well, it seems that over the past 150 years, there has been much talk about whether or not we can protect humankind from becoming an endangered species through vaccines. The problem is that that discussion has turned into a virtual war. That is, the wars of the vaccines going back about 150 years. And today on Viewpoint, we're going to take a look at the history of those wars and what we can learn from those wars, if anything. It has been said that the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history, and those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. So when the CDC comes out and tells us concerning the so-called vaccines related to COVID that they did not accomplish what vaccines were supposed to accomplish, in other words, that they would prevent you from getting the disease and prevent you from transmitting the disease, and they finally admitted that they weren't going to do either one of those things and therefore had to change the definition of vaccine in order to appear rational to the human mind. Well, what is a person supposed to do to engage in warfare? A lot of warfare is done by deception. And so there might be a lot of deception that's involved historically with regard to the issue of vaccines. We're going to talk about that here on the program today, all the way around the world, from Richmond, Virginia to Switzerland. That's right, from Richmond, Virginia to Switzerland and back again. Vaccinations required for school attendance have increased nearly threefold since the 1950s, now targeting 17 infectious diseases. However, the impact of the expanded schedule on children's overall health remains uncertain. Why is it uncertain? Because there's no such thing as settled science. The whole very nature of science is that it's not settled. In other words, you're pursuing some, hopefully some truth. You're pursuing something that is right or that we can test, that we can determine, and so on, but it remains somewhat elusive. And that's why we get different theories. That's why things change over time, so that in the area of climate change, which began back in the 1970s, it was all about global cooling. We were heading into a new ice age. And then that transformed into global warming. And when global warming seemed to be fading and we couldn't prove that, then it became climate change. So whatever changes occurred, well, we captured them all. Is that science? Where is the science in all of that? So one has concluded there's no such thing as settled science. Even Dr. Fauci, although Dr. Fauci said that basically follow the science and I am its voice. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to be talking with a voice coming from Switzerland concerning her book that's actually a fact-packed history of vaccines and their makers. Her name is Shaz Khan, and it's called The Ultimate Vaccine Timeline. It's a fascinating book and takes us back in history to help us to understand what has really gone on with the whole issue of vaccines. And if you go back, you find that an awful lot of doctors that are quoted in this book said that vaccines were an effort to play God and were exceedingly dangerous to the future of humankind. On the other hand, the argument is that vaccines have saved hundreds of thousands, if not millions and millions of lives over the past 150 years or so. All that then lays the foundation for our conversation together here on Viewpoint with Shaz Khan concerning this matter of vaccine history. So I welcome you to the program. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. Today, hopefully, will not be any exception, because we all have to make choices. And those choices have consequences. They really do. So if you don't believe there's anything such as settled science, then where does science serve us? And how much hope, how much promise can we put into the promises that are made by so-called scientists through media that has ulterior motives in order to convince us that everything is settled, don't worry about it? Shaz, I appreciate so much your joining us from Switzerland. You told me you haven't yet ascended Mount Assiniboine, the Matterhorn out there, but you're only about an hour away from the great CERN reactor there that's supposed to produce the God particle. That's a pretty adventurous place that you are.
Thank you, Chuck. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, CERN is an interesting place to live where I am, because Geneva obviously is the center as well of all the international organizations, including the WHO, Gavi, the World Economic Forum. So there's a lot of interesting places around here, yeah, for sure.
Is Switzerland still neutral?
That's their discourse. But
that's almost
really
like saying science is settled, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. We're supposed to be neutral, and the population is very proud of that, but we've seen in the last few years that it doesn't really apply anymore.
What's the population of Switzerland now?
We're about 8.5 million.
Wow, that's the size of Virginia. That's about the population of Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a relatively small country then, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
But beautiful.
Very beautiful, yes.
Yeah.
They were very lucky to be here.
Well, indeed. If there's one place on the planet I would like to go, it's Switzerland. I really would. Maybe I'll get there one of these days. But in any event, we need to talk about this matter of vaccines. Are they settled science? And the reality is they're not settled at all. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And the reality is it's not enough science at all, especially for vaccine safety.
When you say that, we're told that everything is safe. Everything is wonderful. Everything's cool. And we should be able to trust these great pontifications coming from the heads of the National Institute of Health and from the CDC. And yet we find that the former head of the CDC is saying, hey, we ought to be filing lawsuits against all of these pharmaceutical companies because they deceived us. What say you?
I would absolutely agree. Unfortunately, they have deceived us, but the government has been partnering with them in that deception. It's not just the pharmaceutical companies. It's also policies and politicians and the regulatory agencies.
Why would we do that? What would be the motivation for government to partner with companies to deceive the American people when, in fact, they know that there's been very little testing concerning the effect of these so-called vaccines, particularly with regard to COVID?
Well, I'd have to speculate, but I think obviously government is made of people, it's made of politicians, and who knows which politicians have been bought, which politicians have been blackmailed, which politicians have something to gain financially from supporting the vaccine policy the way it is today. I mean, thankfully, Kennedy has got rid of the whole advisory committee.
There we go. We need to look into the JFK, Kennedy, and what's going on here. We'll be right back, friends. Stay tuned. This is Viewpoint.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
It's quite fascinating when we look at the vaccine wars that have developed over the past 150 years. Vaccines are the only product where manufacturers have immunity from liability, legal mandates enforcing their use, promotion using taxpayer dollars, government-funded advertising, and guaranteed sales in a global market. Pretty amazing. Vaccines are the only medical product that does not have to do certain kinds of pharmacological studies, prove long-term safety, use a saline placebo controls in trials, be studied for carcinogenic properties, and be studied for genotoxic properties. Wow. Wow. And we're just starting. We're just starting here. And so our special guest today from Switzerland, joining us with her amazing book, The Ultimate Vaccine Timeline, A Fact-Packed History of Vaccines and Their Makers. This, my friends, is a $35 book, yours for $32 on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. You can give us a call at 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. This is a very substantive book, friends. Very substantive. And I guarantee you, you will never find anything like this book anywhere. This gives the whole history, a chronology of vaccination going all the way back into the late 1800s. And it's pretty amazing. Is vaccination dangerous? Well, that question was asked by the New York Times on September 26, 1869. That takes us back a ways. And so today we talk about this. In fact, at the very beginning of the book, it says in 1874, Switzerland introduced the mandatory public education for children. That was the mandatory. The imperial vaccination law made smallpox vaccine free in the German Empire. Vaccination in infancy and revaccination at age 12 became compulsory. Vaccines are manufactured by state-run production sites and supervised by local authorities. And in 1874, the same thing was with regard to England. This goes way back, friends, way back, 1874. And you may not have realized that. I certainly didn't realize that, but that's a fur piece back. But the rest is history. And when Bill Gates says, you know, vaccines are the number one way we're going to win the world and save the world. And so he has actually devoted untold billions of his dollars to promote vaccination. Well, behind the scenes, those dollars seem to come back to him, not in shades of mediocrity, but also in great volume because of the, well, there's a lot of profit in vaccines. Massive profit. So today, our special guest, Shaz Khan, with this monumental book. So I want to ask you, Shaz, because we have an audience that are, we have a very serious audience here, very serious audience. We don't play games with the truth. But when we talk about science, people seem to have the idea and have been given this thinking ever since, say, 1957, when Russia launched its Sputnik. All of the things changed. Engineering and science became almost godlike in our world, and people look at science as if somebody uses the word science, it must be true and must be depended upon. What say you?
Well, I'd agree with that for sure. It's become scientism, become a belief system, which
exactly.
is actually not founded in solid, what I would believe is solid science, especially not vaccine.
Scientism. So that's like philosophy, isn't it? It's an ism. It's a belief system.
Yeah. It's a religious belief system where anybody with a white coat or a scientist has, you know, the absolute truth. There's no discussion. There's no debate, which is exactly how science progresses. It progresses with the outliers and with the people who contest the consensus. And this is exactly what we are where we are at with vaccines. It's a consensus belief, and well, you're not allowed to question it.
It used to be in this country, at least back in my early days as a child, that children were, at least by the 1950s, were told to get, I think it was like a group of five vaccines against certain basic things. And now I'm led to believe that that has multiplied to maybe 17 all at once. Is that basically true?
Not 17 all at once, but absolutely. Over the course of, in the 2 years of the existence of a human being coming to Earth, they do get a lot of vaccines. A lot of them are combined in one injection.
Right.
So you can get the 6-in-1 now, which is supposed to be more convenient, but it's not necessarily safer. And also, if there are injuries afterwards, it's much harder to identify which component of the vaccine caused the problem. But yeah, we're on a ridiculous level of giving about, you know, over 50 vaccines by the age of 18 years old now.
Wow, that's amazing. And what I understand is that, and I don't pretend to be a vaccine expert, but I hear a lot of conversation about this and have read some of it. But what I understand is that when you are providing these vaccines one on top of the other for different things, not only is it difficult to identify whatever the consequences negative might be because you don't know which one it's from, but it also, I'm told, actually multiplies the possibility of adverse reactions that don't necessarily come about or are identified until maybe a few years later.
That's absolutely quite possible, and this is why it's important that we do preclinical trials that last at least 2 years to be able to identify any long-term safety events.
But those trials are not being made, are you saying?
Not as they are. They should be. No, I mean, if you look at the hepatitis B shot, for instance, that is given at birth in the U.S. and in actually many other countries, not here in Switzerland, but many countries in Europe do actually give hepatitis B at birth. They monitored safety for 5 days following the injection. So if anybody thinks out there that 5 days is sufficient to look at a safety profile of a genetically engineered product, I remind everybody that babies really don't need, because they're not going to have any risk of hepatitis B at birth, and not for several years, that five days monitoring is simply not enough. And the 2 years that we should have had for COVID, for example, was short-tracked by a year and a half, because we only had 6 months of data, and it was put on the market after only 2 months of safety data.
And yet it was promoted as absolutely safe, don't have to worry about a thing. Everything's wonderful, and if you get this, you won't get COVID, and you won't be able to transmit it. Dr. Robert Fauci actually said that, and then he got COVID, what, 5-6 times? How can a so-called scientist stand before the American people and say, trust me, I represent science, and then everything that happens to him is totally contrary to what he says?
Fauci's an interesting character. I mean, obviously, he has a lot of power and a lot of clout. So I don't know how he slept at night and how he took himself seriously after that. But there you go. There are a lot of egos involved as well. Very many people who think they're very important, and they probably are. But that's also how they get away with a lot of these things.
So they see themselves as somewhat godlike. Is that it?
Well, Fauci was a good example. I mean, he said, I am the science. I mean,
I am, yeah.
Godlike than that.
Well, it's interesting because Dr. Deborah Birx, who appeared alongside him in the early days of the whole COVID thing, always on television every day, came out with a book and was on television around here in this country saying, you know what? I never believed that the COVID shots were going to prevent people from getting COVID, or that they would prevent them from transmitting COVID. It was just going to reduce the effects of the disease. Well, that was totally different than anything that had been told us up to that time. And yet she was the one standing along with Dr. Fauci as it was being proclaimed that you wouldn't get COVID and you wouldn't be able to transmit it. Very confusing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these people are trying to backtrack maybe and trying to say, well, no, I knew already. So even though they might have given one discourse and one argument to the public, they privately maybe saw something else. I mean, Robert Redfield, from what I understood, had pretty much the same view, that he was rather skeptical of the mRNA vaccine and also the origins of COVID, but didn't publicly disclose this information until about 2 years later.
Dr. Robert Malone has joined us here on this program about 6 months ago. We had a great conversation, and he's the one that kind of was at the beginning for developing the mRNA protocol for these new vaccines. And he came out and basically warned the whole world. I mean, it was very serious. He warned the whole world, stop using those vaccines because you do not know the ultimate effect of them 5 years, 10 years, 10, 15 years down the road. There's going to have a multiplying effect, a negative effect. And he warned the world, do not do that. Did anybody listen? No. Why?
Well, I think because he was censored quite quickly and made out to be a bit crazy, is what they usually do with anybody who questions vaccinations, even new ones. And it's interesting considering he was so involved in the development of that technology. Mm-hmm. And he did take the vaccine. He believed that they had managed to make it safer in the time that he was working on it. But then he realized quite quickly that wasn't the case. But if they censor these voices, they ridicule them. They don't give them the same platform. I mean, thankfully, Robert Malone now, he has a platform. He's managed to reach millions of people. Yeah. He was actually instrumental for me to help me get this book published. And there are many, many, many people who may be behind closed doors will absolutely agree with him, but not in public. And this is the problem at the moment, is trying to get the public to speak out and to share their voice and not be afraid of the discrimination that we experienced, that we did during COVID, where families were divided because, you know, they had different viewpoints on vaccination, different viewpoints on the policies around COVID. I think now, 5 years later, we should be able to already share our voices and realize that we all care about the same thing, which is the health, our health and the health of our children.
Right. But we're told that if you don't get your children vaccinated, you are virtually engaged in child abuse, and that the government can force you, compel you to have your children vaccinated. It goes all the way back to 1874, right there in Germany. So, If we have this kind of history, these vaccine wars have been in process now for a very long time, and yet parents increasingly are concerned that these mandated vaccine protocols are actually leading to incredible and gradual deleterious effects in their kids. And we're seeing it played out in things like ADHD and a whole lot of other things that we've not experienced before.
Absolutely. I mean, I personally, on my own level of experience, I'm not a parent, but I've got friends who have kids. And a lot of kids who get vaccinated shortly end up in the hospital for some reason, either a bad case of pneumonia or some weird gastrointestinal thing. And there's never any connection made to a potential vaccine, which might have been given a few weeks before or even a few months before. But there's definitely no checking to see the general health outcome between vaccinated and unvaccinated. That's why it's very important for parents to know their rights. I know in the U.S. that you have very different rules in the states, like some have philosophical exemptions and religious exemptions and some don't. Uh-huh. My understanding, California and New York are some of the stricter states. But even then, parents do have rights, and it's important they know how to exercise them, especially when it comes to choosing if they get their kids vaccinated or not.
I'm looking at a Yale Daily News report that came out, said higher numbers of vaccinated children were found among those who were diagnosed with OCD, anxiety disorder, and ADHD as soon as 3 months after their vaccinations. That's a pretty profound statement.
Yeah, and it's not surprising, unfortunately.
OCD, anxiety disorder, and ADHD. We're seeing an awful lot. It's a flood of that upon our world.
It's kind of like, I would say, a low-grade neurological injury. Because one thing that we've seen in history is that neurological injury following vaccination has been known and acknowledged for over a century. And now it's going to the point where there's all these different types of neurological injury. And I could say even anxiety, OCD, all this might be a neurological type of symptom, which has not been analyzed enough in relation to vaccines. And of course, there's other toxins potentially aggravating the situation, but there's no other product that we inject into our bodies that bypasses our natural immune system and our natural defenses, and which is accumulated.
So in reality, when we were talking about the COVID vaccines, they were actually created to bypass our natural immune system and create an alternative immune system, but actually only to protect against one particular thing, and leaving our immune systems open to a vast array of other insults that would be devastating. We'll be right back.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, on the front page are two great videos. First, an interview and discussion of Chuck's book, Out of Egypt. Also, a great TV interview with Chuck regarding his book, Seduction of the Saints. Much more videos, a For Pastors Only section, and also you can view Chuck's weekly teachings, all at his website, saveus.org. That's saveus.org. Also on Chuck's website, listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast. Listen to the archives. Maybe you missed a program. Check it out at saveus.org. Also, there are some great resources, hospitality information, also information about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, newsletters, articles, prophecy, prayer and revival information, all at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. Today we're talking about the vaccine wars and why there is such a battlefield out there. You have one side saying this is the best thing since sliced bread. It's saving untold millions of lives. On the other hand, you have equally strong positions indicating no, these are causing irremediable damages to our children and to the rest of us to an extent which we don't even necessarily recognize for years and years, maybe a generation. And so this is a big deal. And Shaz, as you were mentioning in the just before the last break, I have an article in front of me. It's 19 pages long, coming from Public Health Policy Journal, stating that vaccination and neurodevelopmental disorders are linked, and it's a study of 9-year-old children enrolled in Medicaid, and the analysis was for 47,000 9-year-old children, revealed that the current vaccination schedule is contributing to multiple forms of neurodevelopmental disorders. Now, that's a pretty, pretty substantial statement coming from the Public Health Policy Journal, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm very glad that they actually published it.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
A lot of these articles don't get published.
Well, I know, and they get quashed. I had an interview in California with a woman, Judy Makowitz, who indicated her whole history about how she was severely maligned by the medical profession, lost her job. She was a leading researcher, and the moment she started telling the truth about vaccines is the moment she was, shall we say, depersonified in the medical profession.
All right, the playbook that they do with any medical professional who dares to ask questions. This is what they did with Dr. Andrew Wakefield as well in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And Judy Mikovits, from what I understood, that she was sounding the alarm on the viral contaminant in vaccines.
Yeah.
Most people don't even realize that the contaminant in the vaccines is actually not a sure way of guaranteeing purification.
Now, what do you mean by contaminants? So that people that are listening can understand a bit of what we're talking about.
So contaminants are like impurities that get into the product through the manufacturing process.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, depending on the vaccine, they'll be manufactured in a slightly different way. You know, viruses need to be cultured on cells, bacteria not so much. They can be put into DNA's plasmids and put into the products. And during the whole manufacturing process, there's always a possibility, especially when you're working with cells, that there will be advantageous viruses in those cells that come into the product. The most famous example is the SV40, which is simian virus 40, that contaminated the polio vaccines in the 60s and was given to almost 100 million Americans. And this is a tumorigenic, so cancer-causing, tumor-causing virus that was basically injected into a large portion of the American population. And that only came out because a researcher actually saw that it was causing tumors in hamsters. And when she tried to sound the alarm, she was basically demoted and they try to shut her up as well.
So what is a person, a reasonable person, supposed to do? What is a parent supposed to do in making decisions regarding their children? I'm looking right here at a report concerning Gardasil, an HPV vaccine that parents, it's advertised on television. You got to get your children, especially your girls, vaccinated with Gardasil. And yet here is a list of some of the horrific things that you don't hear about on the television ad. General disorders, death, immune system disorders, autoimmune diseases, nervous system disorders, acute disseminated encephalomyelitis, Guillain-Barre syndrome. I mean, this is bad stuff.
Mm-hmm. Before the COVID injection, HPV was by far the most dangerous product on the market. The most dangerous vaccine. But for any parent who obviously is faced with this decision, there's nothing else that you can do but really do your research. It warrants you spending time looking into the package inserts, for one, looking at the schedule, reading a couple of books on the subject, and following your gut instincts. Because I know there are a lot of mothers out there who, on their gut level, they sense that something isn't right, but they get, you know, overpowered or intimidated by the doctor, and they'll just give in. And I have to say, the mothers, trust your gut instinct. You know your child better than a doctor does.
Well, you say, but they say you have to trust your doctor.
Well, I
yet
wish
the
you
doctors,
could remember you.
The doctors were caught in what I would call a tsunami of force coming from government and coming from threats concerning, well, if you don't do this, then you don't love people and you're not caring for people. And the medical associations compelled doctors, if you don't do this, we're going to take you off the medical association. So what are they going to do? They just exceed and do what they're told without thinking.
Yeah. My doctors get a lot of pressure from insurance companies as well, in the same situation as here in Switzerland. I have to remind the viewers that doctors receive very, very little training in vaccines and basically nothing on vaccine safety. Mm-hmm. They're not taught to look out for side effects or to look out for, you know, the child that might be susceptible to having side effects. I mean, there used to be a time where you didn't give a vaccine to a child who had a fever or who was sick, who had an infection. And now those safeguards need to be thrown out the window. Same thing for vaccinating pregnant women. We never used to give vaccines to pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
The flu vaccine's been given since the 1960s, and then the DTP since, I think, the 2010, 2015. But now a pregnant woman is advised to get the DTP, the flu, COVID, and RSV now. It's ridiculous to be thinking that we're giving those injections to pregnant women without the clinical trials behind it to prove it's safe.
No, go ahead. My question for you then is, how is a parent supposed to come to a place of trust? How is anybody supposed to come to a place of trust? Because everybody was told, you got to get this or else. You don't love people. You don't care for. We had pastors in many of our churches here who said, if you don't get the vaccine, you don't love Jesus.
A very manipulative tactic.
It is. It's a very manipulative tactic, but I understand how they came up with that. Jesus said the second great commandment is love your neighbor as yourself. So if you don't get the vaccine, you don't love your neighbor, and therefore you don't love Jesus. That's how they reasoned
it. Based on the premise that it protects against transmission, which we know it doesn't.
So. Right, exactly. And it doesn't even keep you from getting it.
Sorry?
And it didn't even keep you from getting the disease.
Exactly. And people still died after it. So the question is, well, why are they pushing something that doesn't prevent transmission, doesn't even prevent the disease? Why are they pushing it on people who maybe didn't even have a risk of getting COVID in the first place?
Yeah.
So trust, like anything, has to be built. And if you can develop a relationship with your pediatrician and he listens to you and you can really have a discussion, then you can build trust. But as far as I understood in the American health system, you don't have enough time to build that trust in a meeting with your doctor. You literally have maybe 10 minutes if you're lucky, and it's not enough time to go over the whole vaccine.
Well, not only that, but they're committed to protocols, and you dare not contravene the protocol because that is who they are. They are dispensers of protocol, and to question the protocols is almost to question the doctor's integrity.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, that is the case. But again, doctors are put under pressure of these, to abide by these protocols by insurance companies, by Medicaid, by Medicare, mm-hmm. who give bonuses and who give incentives to you know, have a certain percentage of their patients who are fully vaccinated. So if you want to deconstruct the system, you have to kind of, you know, build maybe alternatives. Is there an alternative system to the insurance system that we have?
Mm-hmm.
But building trust, especially after COVID, it's quite the challenge.
It is. We're facing increasing. We've always had vaccine wars, but they have accelerated because of the COVID situation. We don't want to spend all our time talking about COVID. We brought up some other things here in the process. If you were to go back, because you trace the chronology of vaccination all the way back to 1874, and with all the specifics, what is so amazing about your book is you really don't leave any stone unturned. It's there. If somebody wants to take the time to look at it, and you're going to get the understanding of how questionable the whole vaccine situation really is. So, number one, does vaccination really save millions of lives who otherwise would have been lost or destroyed?
That's a very good question that I don't think anybody really has the answer to, because I've asked the World Health Organization for the statistics or the documents to prove their statement that vaccines have saved millions of lives. And the statement is based on mathematical modelization.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based on actual, you know, they go into a country, they look at the mortality rate before they bring in a vaccine campaign,
right,
and check the mortality rate afterwards. That's not how they do it.
So it's not based on scientific evidence.
It's based on mathematical models, which is, I could argue, it's a part
which
of
is
science,
another form of theorization.
Exactly.
Very
theoretical. So even if you are preventing measles infections in Africa, fair enough, but are those measles infections really giving the child a stronger immune system? Are they really more robust? Are they more protected against general diseases? I mean, there was a researcher, Dr. Peter Abey, who was a very prominent vaccinologist, who actually found out that the DTP, so the whole cell pertussis, which is no longer used in the U.S. or in Switzerland, but he was noticing a higher fatality rate after that DTP vaccine campaign. So they might have been protected against diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough,
mm-hmm.
but they were more susceptible to dying from other infections or other problems. And we obviously know in Africa that if they all had access to clean water and good food, they probably would have a much healthier outcome, but that doesn't bring any profit to anybody.
Interesting. So money is at the heart of much of it. Money and control. Money and control. So many factors that we want to be able to trust. And trust is at stake here, isn't it? That's really the big issue. Let's talk about that when we get back from the break. Friends, get a copy of this wonderful book, The Ultimate Vaccine Timeline, A Fact-Packed History of Vaccines and Their Makers. It's a $35 book, yours for $32 on our website, saveus.org, or call us 1-800-SAVE-USA.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
It's almost as if the vaccine has become so standardized in our mind and heart set that it's impossible to think of life without it. And the question is, should we? Should we think of life without it? Is the benefit of the various vaccines exceeding the detriment? We don't really know. And science hasn't been able to tell us. Not really, because there's so many other factors that are involved. Just this week, I had to go to the hospital for a particular sting that caused my face to swell up. And the first thing they asked me was, have you had your tetanus shot in the last 5 years? That's what they were concerned about. Have you had your tetanus shot? Well, that's a kind of vaccine, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And it's one of the early ones.
Yeah.
And one of the most contentious ones, because often I get told, but tetanus is super important. You have to get that. And ironically, it came out that it was the vaccine you least needed, especially for children, because we don't live in the age where we're at risk of tetanus. I mean, when I looked in history to find the first cases of tetanus, I found them to occur after a smallpox vaccination in 1901 in Camden, New Jersey. So this was a problem when we had horses as transport and there was, horse poo everywhere, manure everywhere, there mm-hmm. was decaying bodies everywhere, there was no sanitation. We didn't have ways of cleaning wounds. There are plenty of ways now to make sure that you don't even get tetanus. And if you do get tetanus, well, there's these, you can get a shot afterwards. You can get a passive immunization, which is, giving yourself a kind of convalescent plasma, if you will.
Well, there's so many things that we've been inoculated against, supposedly, whether it's cholera, whether it's rabies. Those are some of the early common ones. Certainly cholera was a deadly thing. Rabies is a horrific thing. But what are the ultimate consequences of so many of the other things, other vaccines that we've been requiring people to get? And the reality, as I understand it, Shaz, and that's what I'm hearing you say, is that most of these vaccines are very specific to a certain thing, a certain bacteria or a certain thing. And we don't know what the other consequences are that would be echoing for immunizing against a certain thing and perhaps opening ourselves up to many other things that otherwise our immune systems would have taken care of.
Absolutely. And I'd say as well, because the pharmaceutical industry are those who pay the bills for the clinical trials and the ones who are paying for all the research, they're not going to research maybe what potential advantage there is of getting measles, because there have been some independent studies that looked at people who had measles during childhood were more protected against cancers later in life. Now, obviously, that's just speculative at the moment because we haven't got enough science to back up that statement. But this is an interesting point. If you get measles naturally and your immune system is getting the practice of a measles infection, which you can, in America, in Switzerland, you're not going to die from measles. And even the two cases that they said died from measles in Texas early in the year, independent doctors actually said it was medical malpractice. It was medical error. It was not measles infection that killed those children. I mean, I had measles when I was growing up, and it was just, you stay a week in bed and right. You don't feel so fantastic. But even a Brady Bunch did a special episode in the 60s on measles, and it was all, fun and games, and yay, we can stay home from school.
Well, I had mumps. I had measles. Everybody in our family had mumps and measles when we were kids. The whole idea was get yourself exposed to those things, get them out of the way. Now it's prevent you from getting them. And I'm wondering to what extent it's valuable to take vaccines to prevent kids from getting those things when, in fact, we don't even know what the ultimate consequences are in other areas of our lives years down the road.
Absolutely. And also it can push these diseases later in life when they can be more inconvenient and even dangerous. Like not getting measles when you're a kid and only having the vaccine that anyway is not going to last a lifetime like natural immunity would. You might be getting measles as an adult or an adolescent when it's more problematic. Same thing with chickenpox and mumps.
Well, yeah, and then it can be really bad later on in life. I thought maybe I had the mumps when I got that sting last week. It caused my entire face to swell up, scared even the doctors to take a look at it. Fortunately, I didn't get a vaccine to take care of it, and it is
settling down now, so I look almost human again, which is an encouraging thing for me when I look in the mirror and when my wife looks. Dr. Fauci said that actually the best vaccine is to get infection. The best vaccination is to get infected yourself. That's what he said, right?
Yeah, he said that about the flu specifically, which is obviously the one that we give to everybody.
Well, I thought COVID was a form of the flu.
Well, yeah, it is basically a bad form of flu, which obviously can kill anybody who's already immunocompromised or has already got comorbidities, who's already quite sick. I mean, here in Switzerland, the average mortality rate at the time we locked down was 84 years old, and that's the life expectancy in this mm-hmm. country.
Wow. Well, and, you know, not only that, but the history, what we were not told, and I had to do my own research, was that for a number of years, the death rate from the flu in the United States of America was over 500,000. Over 500,000, yeah. That's a lot.
Is that from CDC?
I can't remember where it came from. I did a lot of research concerning early on when the COVID thing came out to try to understand in an honest way the difference between COVID and other diseases, including various flu that we had experienced. And yes, COVID was more severe, but it wasn't as devastating, comparatively speaking, as what we were told.
Well, I had to scare the population into complying, didn't I?
Yeah. And then more recently, as recently as the last several months, studies have come out and said that more people actually died from the vaccine than they did from COVID.
Yeah, but the officials in governments and the World Health Organization don't recognize or even acknowledge that as being even close to the truth. So as you were talking before the break about trust,
yes,
if the World Health Organization and the authorities would actually acknowledge the injuries and help the victims get better, that would already be a huge step towards regaining trust, because trust has been absolutely obliterated in the medical community, at least here in Switzerland, and I think the same of the US and even the UK and Europe in general. The medical community has lost complete trust in their health authorities, in their regulatory agencies.
Mm-hmm.
But if the WHO came out and admitted, you know, okay, there are injuries, there are some all kinds of horrendous injuries, and we're going to, you know, do what we can to help the victims, that would be a huge gesture. But up until now, they're still calling this vaccine not just safe, but very safe.
Right. And mocking those who would say otherwise.
Absolutely. Calling them crazy. I mean,
because you just don't understand the science. And science has to be worshipped. You have to bow to the authority of science, even though science is not a fixed thing. It's not settled. The whole meaning of science is that it's not fixed. It's not settled. We don't know that. It's based upon theories, and then you try to duplicate those things. I think of a fellow by the name of Darwin, for instance. He came up with his ideas about humankind and where we came from, and then along came a fellow by the name of Charles Lyell, who took that theory and tried to impose it upon geological issues, and I actually climbed Mount Lyell, named for him, in Yosemite, a 13,000-foot peak there. But it was all theory. It was all theory, and you try to squash various what you think are facts, things that you observe, into the theory to confirm the theory, but the theory might not be right in the very beginning. So science has served us, but we've allowed it to enslave us, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So why did you write this book, Shaz?
Well, as I'm not a medical professional, I'm not a parent, vaccines weren't on my radar whatsoever, but 10 years ago, my father died 2 months after his flu shot. And it just got me asking a lot of questions, because he was diagnosed with lung cancer, but he was admitted to hospital with neurological symptoms. And just something didn't add up for me. So when I found out he had a flu vaccine, the first thing I went and did was read the package insert. And lo and behold, the package insert actually states that neurological symptoms are acknowledged following flu vaccine.
Wow.
Now, I don't know exactly which one he had. So I don't know if it had thimerosal and aluminum in it. But it just started, I started asking questions, basically. And it was also the year that a good friend of mine was giving birth to her first child. And I just thought, you know, I'm a geek, so I love reading. I love libraries. So I very quickly started going to libraries, to national archives, and trying to find as much historical documentation as I could find about vaccinations. And the more I found, the more outraged I was. I really went through the cognitive dissonance, as they call it, because I came from an approach of believing that vaccines were safe and effective. I'm born in the late 70s, so I've had some vaccines, not all of them, but I had all the travel vaccines. I had tetanus on multiple occasions. I had hepatitis A. And I was just shocked that the government acknowledged serious neurological injuries for over a century, but this is not disclosed to the public. And I mean, in the book, I put a couple of documents that I found during my research that I just wanted to share with people, because most people are not going to go into the archives or to the libraries and go and dig out these old documents. And they're not digital. So AI doesn't have access to them. AI will never be able to take any research from them. So,
right, because AI is just going to disgorge what the leading voices have been saying, and you're not going to get the truth.
Absolutely. You're not going to get whatever information is only available in print, unless it's downloaded into AI and it becomes part of its, you know, its memory and its information center. But this is not going to happen with most of the documents that you find on vaccination.
You know, my wife and I decided never to take a flu shot and never to have our children get a flu shot. They had their basic shots, I think that five-fold shot early on in life. Our daughters are now in their late 40s or early 50s. But what we're finding is that children that have had these multiple shots later on, say in the 80s and 90s, their experience and their not only the parents, but then also the children of those parents are experiencing symptoms and problems that we have not seen historically in this country. One wonders, is this not connected in some way? And as part of the vaccine wars, I think, is this not connected in some way to the complete casting away of all concern and just ramrodding these vaccines in on our immune systems and thus destroying what God created to protect us?
Absolutely. I mean, on top of it, it's a one-size-fits-all with vaccines. You're not taking into account differences between, ethnic differences, genetic differences, predispositions. You're just giving the same shot and the same dose to the same to everybody. And I remind viewers that between 1983 and 2005, in the USA, the number of vaccines available doubled, whilst the number of mandated vaccines tripled. And we're not seeing a healthier generation as a result.
No, we're not. Well, I appreciate so much your joining us all the way from Switzerland to talk about this.
Thank you so much for having me, Chuck.
A country there the size of Virginia, a very important country in our world, in our history, very beautiful country. And I really appreciate your joining us. Your book actually is not so much trying to prevail upon us one way or the other, but to show the history, to really show the history, the reality of what's happened, and then people have to make their decision. The Ultimate Vaccine Timeline, a fact-packed history of vaccines and their makers. You'll be surprised, friend, as you go through this. It's quite a piece of work. I mean a real piece of work. $35 book, hardbound book, yours for $32. On our website, saveus.org. Give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. At $6 for postage and handling. We'll get it in your hands. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. To be informed in this instance may actually be to be transformed. We'll be back with you tomorrow. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, Shaws, I hope that we